Hello and welcome. First of all, a few bullet points. I'm Daniel Selwood. That's Mike Truman.
Hello there.
This is the podcast for issue 4291, this week's issue. And the first story is one that I think a lot of people will be interested in. And that is your comment piece, Mike, on the Christopher Lunn debacle.
Article rather than a comment piece, but yes. Christopher Lunn and Company are a firm of accountants down in Crowborough who were raided last year by the Revenue, and all their clients are currently under investigation. What the piece is about is a court case that has taken place, but we've not yet got the judgment, because in December the Revenue, without any real warning other than what had been going on, told Christopher Lunn that they were no longer prepared to accept them as agents. In other words, they can't file online as agents for clients, and the Revenue won't correspond with them. And this was a judicial review case trying to overturn that decision.
Now, my understanding is that your article is more of an analysis, because we've reported at quite some length on the judicial review, and it's all available for free on our website. But you're doing a little.
I've not really done much analysis in there yet. There will be next week. I hope we'll do a proper analysis piece. This is a summary of what's already there. But you're right. We've done. I mean, I had to knock this down to sort of a much shorter piece. We have got full details online of exactly what happened in the judicial review. But the interesting part about this, I think, is that it shows that as far as the Revenue is concerned, agents don't have any rights, essentially. Agents are, as that's possibly putting just a little bit strongly, but not very. As far as the Revenue are concerned, the relationship is between them and taxpayers.
And the agents are simply a conduit that's...
That's right. What they say is that it's the reason that they deal with agents is part of their normal care and management of the tax system. And it was very striking, actually, as both sides looked to find bits in the legislation or even in the guidance that describe what happens with agents. There's virtually nothing there. It is just practice.
I mean, we could talk about this through the entire podcast, so I think we'll leave it for people to read up on it, and we'll move on here.
Yeah, just the one comment I'd make is that by the time that decision's out, by the time the magazine's out, it may be that we already have the decision. So do keep a lookout for that, and as soon as we get it on the site, obviously we'll report it.
Good point. Right, moving on to something a little less controversial. It's Alison's article on the internal review process.
Yeah, although that's got its controversies, and it is, she talked to a lot of people about it. Did they find the internal review process where, rather than go straight to a tribunal, there's a sort of step in between where the Revenue have a look at the case again? Did they find it useful? And mixed is the answer. There's a real mixed reaction. Some people find it is good, some don't. I think it looks like it's probably better when you think that a particular inspector is taking an unusual line, a line that the Revenue wouldn't normally take. It seems to be rather less easy to get the Revenue to change the Revenue overall to change their view on something if a technical specialist has looked at it and decided then that's getting quite difficult. But what she does find is that the Revenue aren't giving the reasons that they ought to be giving in all cases. I mean, the idea is meant to be that a reviewer looks at it, comes back and says, yes, we think this is right because of this, this and this, and that we're not seeing that reasoning, which is obviously vital as part of the process.
And there's also some criticism of our officers who are dealing with the cases, the original cases, they're not as well informed as...
Well, that's
the reviewing officers.
Yeah, that can be a worry. I mean, in particular, one of the things that's a real problem is if you've got a case where the issue was sent right up to some high level of HMRC and a view was given on the technical point of it, it's going to be very rare to get a reviewing officer to overturn it, because it's a bit like asking a corporal to overturn the decision of a general. You know, it's just not going to happen. As I say, I think it's much better with inconsistencies than it is with cases like that.
Okay. Next up is Neil Warren's piece. He gives practical examples on how large amounts of VAT and stamp duty land tax, I'm reading off a sheet here, you can tell, can be saved if an option to tax election is revoked after 2 decades. Mike, Is this article only relevant to landlords?
No, it's relevant to almost everybody, particularly those who act for businesses which are exempt or partly exempt, because the point is that, yes, the landlord has the decision as to whether to revoke the option to tax, which I'm sure you actually know backwards, don't you? You're just hiding your light under a bushel. The landlord has a decision to revoke, but obviously the tenant could write and say, by the way, is it possible for you to revoke this? I mean, if you're a tenant and you can't reclaim all the VAT, then why not write to a landlord and say, has by any chance your option to tax been in place for more than 20 years? If so, would you be amenable to revoking it? And maybe you'd agree a little bit extra rent and everybody benefits, which sounds like a good idea to me.
How likely would a tenant... Would it be for a tenant to do that?
Well, I mean, probably at the moment it's not happening because most tenants don't know and are not aware that most accountants are advising them. So it's a really good way to get in with your tenants and say, look, or get in with your clients and say, look, are you in this position? I mean, it's easy enough to find the ones that are in exempt or partially exempt businesses. Doesn't cost anybody anything for them to write off. Maybe you can do it for them and get the work that way. But I mean, I think it's an interesting point. It really needs to be picked up because obviously something that happened 20 years ago, everyone's probably forgotten about. So well worth having a look at.
Great stuff. Right, finally, Alex Byrne is wondering whether there'll be more or fewer inquiries this.
Yeah, he thinks there are going to be fewer, which is an interesting line. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I do think that the offshore disclosure stuff is still working its way through, and I certainly think that, as we've said before, time without number, if you keep cutting revenue staff, how on earth are they going to do any of the work that they need to do, particularly taking up inquiries?
This is a point he raises, isn't
it? He does, yeah, he looks at that in some detail. He also is not convinced that the record checks that the revenue have announced, which will happen later on this year, are going to be carried through. I'd have thought they would be given the emphasis, but he's right. I mean, it's going to be quite time consuming. So if you're going to take, you know, thousands of small businesses and check that their records are up to date, unless it's just part of a VAT check, which is a bit of a cheat, then it is difficult to see where they're going to get the staff from.
Which sort of leads us a little clunkily into a reminder for our listeners, our Right to a Reply campaign.
Mm.
Which has begun to spark some response, and we can see the letters to various MPs online. Well, we can, and so can our web users.
Yeah, but it really is important, this. I mean, I know, you know, you've only just got past January and all the rest of it. It is vitally important. If people will have a look at that original article on Right to a Reply, copy it to your MP with a few comments of your own about your experiences. It's incredible what difference it makes, because every one of those is going to go into the Treasury. I haven't yet had a reply to my original open letter to David Gawke. I suspect I won't get one unless he gets dozens of letters coming in from MPs. That's what's going to shift it and actually give us some sort of traction. So please do get on, write to your MP, and do send us a copy.
And once you've done that, you can read my article this week, which is about the online future of tax software. It's a fairly lengthy piece, but entirely free to view, and it'll be online from Wednesday.
And we're worth looking at. He's not allowed to say that.
Yeah. I think that's it for this week, so thanks for listening, and cheerio.
Bye now.